Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Another week of January 2019 come and gone. And another crazy week, I should say. We've had all sorts of spectacles this week. We had Nancy Pelosi disinviting the President of the United States to give the State of the Union at the Capitol. It looks like the Senate is going to extend him an invitation to do it in the Senate chambers. And there's not enough room for all the House representatives. And when asked about that, Trump said, well, they can watch it on TV. I just loved it. And then, of course, he grounded Nancy Pelosi's 7-day junket to Afghanistan and Belgium and wherever else she was going. I mean, all nonsense. During the government shutdown that she's so worried about. And he did it like as they were on the bus going to Andrews Air Force Base to take a military plane out. I'm not sure it was the wisest move, because her canceling the State of the Union address, at least at the Capitol, just showed her for what she was. But it sure was fun. I mean, this is why we hired this guy. But I have a lot to cover with you in this show. And, you know, last week, first of all, let me apologize. WordPress, which is a commonly used platform for, wow, millions and millions of websites around the world and here in the United States, decided it was going to update all its features. And I guess it decided it wasn't going to tell anybody. And as a result, we had huge problems with the On the Right Side Radio website, which generates kind of shows for everything, whether it's AM or it's the podcast or whatever. And we didn't know about it until the producers tried to load the show last Saturday morning. And as it turns out, there were a bunch of other media sites that had problems through most of the week, too. But our producers did a great job, reset the site. They managed to get the podcast going an hour or two late last Saturday. And they finally got last Saturday's show up, I believe, Wednesday morning. So my apologies to those of you, probably those many of you, who went to the site to listen to, or went to the podcast to listen to the radio show last week and couldn't get it. It was not you and it was not your computer. It was the system. It was the matrix. But anyway, that is now corrected, so you should be able to listen to last week's show, which, by the way, I think you'll find really, really, really interesting. Because what I did was I took a whole bunch of points, a whole bunch of dots, all these disjointed pieces of news that you hear out here. And, you know, I am told by a lot of my listeners and by other folks in media that I am one of the best, if not the best, in media at taking a whole bunch of seemingly non-related, far-flung, over in this corner, that corner, up in this ceiling, down on this floor, dots, and bring them together and making sense of what the big picture means. In other words, looking at things from the stratosphere rather than the weeds. And last week's show was all about all the things that the Democrats have going to try and number one, gain control, and number two, maintain their control in perpetuity. And, I talked about their opposition to the wall, their opposition to any closed borders, legislative opposition, gerrymandering, redistricting, you know, welfare, education, health, voter fraud, electioneering, felons getting the vote, like 1.4 million of them in Florida last year. Wow. There are attacks on Trump, and there are attacks on the people who support Trump. Remember, folks, they dislike Trump because he stands in the way of what they want to do. They were so close. It would have been a done deal if Hillary Clinton had been in. I mean, we would have been the conservative movement, the pro-Constitution, folks in this country would have been in quite a pickle. Just think about the Supreme Court, if nothing else, but it's up and down the range. But it's really about us. They hate us, you know. They hate us for who we are, where we live, what we think, what we do. Our resistance to their myopic, collective, non-American thought process. It is us they hate. Don't ever forget that. And big tech, you know, putting their hands on the scale of politics and abortion and economy and a little bit on masculinity, which I'm going to hit way hard this morning. And Cloward and Piven. And anyway, what I did was I took all these dots, all these stories that you hear bits and pieces and tads and this and that about from time to time, and I connected them to show you what the real, I won't even call them Democrats, what the real progressive game plan is and how they are making that progress on a whole bunch of different fronts that seem widely separated and not related, but in fact are very narrowly constricted and all related. If you get a chance, listen to the show. I'm going to do much the same this morning, but it has to do with, you know, the new favorite lefty deal, which is white males and masculine, toxic masculinity. Okay. And while it's kind of humorous, when you look at it in the context, once again, of what seems like disjointed dots, and you put them all together, it's quite worrisome. You'll see when I get to that segment. We're going to talk a little bit about this morning, too, about some more of the progressives, democratic socialists, whatever you want to call these people, some more of their little tricks and little behind-the-scenes shenanigans to try and deprive you of your vote, to try and deprive you of the meaning of your vote. And again, kind of like last week, but with a whole different set of dots, what they are actually doing on day one, what they did on day one of the new Congress. In fact, it was called House Bill Number 1. Wait to hear what was in it. Let me give you a hint. Electoral college, voter registration, voter roll purging, voter ID. That's just a hint. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about, I talked a little bit about it last week, OAC, you know, our friend Cortez, that phenomenon who got a total of 16,000 votes in her congress. You know, I'm laughing, but it's not funny. 16,000 votes and managed to win by 3,000 votes in a 750,000 person district. And who now has rapidly become the face of at least the upstart, the radical upstart part of, you know, we call it the Democratic Party, but it's not anymore. And I'm going to tell you, in the course of discussing her new Green Deal, which I talked about a little bit last week, we're going to go into more depth this week, I'm going to tie that into all these dots about control. This is all about control. Getting control and maintaining control in perpetuity. Anyway, you'll find it interesting. And, you know, we chuckle over the things that she says and the fact that she goes on TV and says, oh, yeah, you know, health care for all, blah, 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 Medicare for all. And, you know, the cost is $43 trillion. I'm not making that up. It's $43 trillion over a 30-year period. And when she's asked how she's going to pay for it, she goes, oh, you know, it's we'll do it. It's not much. I haven't put the numbers to it. And, you know, your first blush is you go, well, you know, this is a 28-year-old congresswoman who won her seat by 3,000 votes out of 25,000 or whatever it was cast in a whole congressional district. And, you know, more power to her, youngest gal ever in Congress, etc. But she doesn't know squat. She's never written a paycheck. She's only received a paycheck. She lied, by the way, about her background. She tried to tell everybody she grew up poor as a church mouse and, you know, scrapping for food on the streets of Brooklyn. Not quite. It's now come out. She went to a private boarding school. Her father was quite successful, kind of engineer type. And she actually comes from money. I mean, the whole thing, as usual, is a big facade. It's a big charade. It's a mirage. This gal is all about wealthy privilege. And if not wealthy, then, should we say, extremely comfortable privilege. And she didn't grow up on the streets of Brooklyn, you know, getting wet under fire hydrants and looking in garbage bins for food. So the whole thing is, it just stinks. However, we laugh at her. But she's not a laughing matter, folks. And her other little cohorts, her radical cohorts in the freshman class of the quote-unquote Democrat-controlled house, Tlaib and the other gal, the MFer gal from Minnesota, the two Muslim gals that were elected, several incredibly, I mean, like they're from Mars, the left side of Mars, guys from California. These people, we chuckle because they appear not to know what they're talking about. And we chuckle because, like, they have no numbers. And we chuckle because none of them can tell us, just like de Blasio in New York and Gavin in California, more sophisticated, elder, alt-left statesmen of the so-called Democratic Party. You know, they can't tell us how much it's going to cost, and they can't tell us how much it's going to pay for it, but it's all going to be free. Well, don't laugh at these people. Number one, they know what it's going to cost, folks. They're just plain stupid on purpose because it suits their means. You know, the end justifies the means, Saul Alinsky. And not only do they know where it's going to cost, they know exactly where the money's going to come from. And I think you know where. You. It's going to come from you. When OAC, when Cortez, darling, talks about a 70% tax on the rich, she forgot to tell you about the 62% tax on the not-so-rich. We're going to talk about that this evening. Because it's all part of the little game plan. It's all part of the dots. The control dots, we'll call it. And then we're going to talk about toxic masculinity. But not just toxic masculinity. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of dots that revolve around it. That's really kind of a scary and brilliant. I've been thinking about this for several weeks. And it kind of clicked this week. And toxic masculinity, just as a hint for when we get to that segment, is tied into abortion. It's tied into immigration. It's tied into birth rate. That's all I'll say for now. But I think when I lay it out for you, the light bulb will blink just like mine did as I was kind of puzzling through research over the last week prior to this show. And we are going to talk a little bit about, in the course of all this, de Blasio and Gavin and their, you know, feed and give health care to the world and blah, 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 blah. And we're going to talk a little bit about some corporate America going left. I have two more companies that you need to not do business with. And I've given you, I think, 11 so far. For Liberty Mutual, who is unfortunate, good insurance company, but, you know, dropped all their conservative hosts, including Laura Ingraham, at the insane and shrill request of David Hogg, that obnoxious, you know, there's a picture of him. And if you type in his name in Google, I think it'll probably come up. And he's there with his shorter dark hair with kind of little bangs over his head. And he has his hand raised like in a Nazi salute. You look at that picture and then dial up Hitler as a young man. And just look at the two pictures. And this guy is a rabid control freak. Just look at those two pictures. Google it up for yourself. I have two great stories. Oh, and we're going to talk about Judicial Watch tonight. I've been meaning to do this for a number of weeks. I've been meaning to do a bunch of segments for a number of weeks. I have one segment coming up next week, by the way, which is on civilizational jihad. I promised it to you this week, but with all the stuff going on, I'm pushing it back a week. A little bit more research I want to do anyway, and I've brought you other shows. Just type jihad in the search bar on the website, or radical Islam, and or Obama. And all those shows will come up for you. All right, but I have two great stories. I kind of got off track there, didn't I? Oh, well, excuse me. It's like 2 in the morning, Saturday morning. You know how it is. And I should have had two cups of coffee rather than one huge cup of coffee here before I start talking. Anyway, I'm going to be talking about Judicial Watch. You know, Tom Fitton and Jay Sekulow. It's unbelievable how much work that outfit does on our behalf. I'm going to give you just a taste of it this morning, and I'm going to exhort you to send them some money, because they do probably more in our defense than almost any other outfit, at least equal, although on different planes, to the NRA, and similar type organizations. I think you'll find it really interesting, because some of the really big news stories of the last few years have been prompted. Judicial Watch has been the catalyst for getting those stories out and getting the information into our hands, which otherwise we would have never seen. I mean, never. Not in a million years. But we're going to start off with two stories for you. And the two stories that I have for you this morning are both, I think they'll make you grin, and they're both historical. You know, I had a good rant story I was going to tell you, too. I'm going to save it for next week, unless, of course, it gets knocked off the story bench by an even better story. But let's start off with story number one this morning. So, it's 1886, and kind of as a prelude, so there's this major American symbol that gets saved from almost not being a major American symbol. Actually, it was kind of saved from being saved and then became an American symbol. Haha, do I have your interest? All right, well, there's a guy by the name of Frederick Auguste Bartholdi over in France. And this was a sculptor and artist who needed money. And he had a grand idea. And that was that the French government should give the American government as a present for its centennial birthday, America's 100th birthday, it should give them a big statue. And of course, this one, Frederick Bartholdi, would be the guy who would make the statue and get paid by the government of France to do it. Well, whether or not he had connections in high places, we'll never know. But he got the deal. He made the deal, so to speak. And he basically took the commission from the French government, and he began to construct a huge statue, which he called the Statue of Liberty, out of copper. And the French government had planned to award it to the United States on Independence Day, on its 100th birthday. And anyway, as a sidelight, by the way, Bartholdi's mom was kind of a nutcase, and according to history books, her face would, quote, curdle milk with a disposition to match. And she reportedly drove Fred's younger brother into an insane asylum. So I think this gives you a feel for Fred's family background while he's putting together the statue. Anyway, he ran into a huge problem. First of all, the statue is monstrous as he's putting it together. Like, the forefinger is 8 feet long, right? The index finger on the statue's hand is 8 feet long. And because it was made of copper, which is not that rigid a metal, it just wouldn't stand up. And it kept kind of crumbling, and he kept having to redo parts of it. So he went to a buddy of his who was kind of a modern-day French wizard, modern-day for then, 1886, a modern-day French wizard in kind of steel skeletons, you know, frameworks. And the guy's name happened to be Eiffel. That's absolutely. His name was Al Eiffel. And Al Eiffel did indeed design the metal skeleton for Fred's Statue of Liberty. He also had a towering success, shall we say, later on in his life, right? The Eiffel Tower. So I thought all that really interesting stuff. By the way, there's a little footnote to this story. I mean, besides this cool story about Fred doing the copper deal with this crazy family and getting the money from France, all that kind of stuff, and then his buddy, Al Eiffel, designing the structure and later going on to do the Eiffel Tower using kind of the same engineering. Once he had the structure, once he had the statue, and once he had the skeleton that Eiffel had designed so the thing would stand, he had one remaining problem, and that was he needed a really big base for the statue. I mean, I don't know how many of you might have a little bronze or whatever in your house, or maybe even, you know, a replica of a bronze, but they sit on bases, right? There has to be some kind of flat thing that looks like something else, but it's really supporting the statuary. Well, think about the Eiffel Tower. Think about the Statue of Liberty. Think about how big it is. I mean, just the forefinger on the statue is 8 feet long. I mean, it needed a huge base to stand. And, of course, it was going to be outside. So it needed to withstand weather and all sorts of stuff. Well, bottom line is, there were some groups over in France. They had promised the funding for the pedestal. But, you know, the French decided not to support the statue idea, and they didn't put up the money. And the French government was desperate, right? They had promised a statue to America. The statue was, like, all done. It looked really cool. Everybody thought it was cool, but, like, it had nothing to stand on. So, it wasn't going to work. Corporate America stepped up, folks. Corporate America. And there was this one, at that time, household name that offered to pay for the base, pedestal, whatever you want to call it. The only thing they asked was that they wanted the right to carve their slogan in an ad on the base. By the way, the company was Fletcher's Castoria. You know, castor oil? Kind of the laxative of the day. I mean, you can't make this up. History is so great. History just rocks. I love it. It's why I like writing the books on it. Anyway, Fletcher's Castoria said they would pay the whole freight for the pedestal for this monstrous statue, the Statue of Liberty, but they wanted their ad and they wanted their name. Well, the French thought about it, and Fred thought about it, and whoever they were talking to in America thought about it, and the bottom line was they said no. They did not want the statue commercialized. Do you know how the base was built, folks? There was a guy by the name of Joseph Pulitzer. That ring a bell? You know, the Pulitzer Prize guy? Yeah. But long before there was a Pulitzer Prize. And he ran a campaign. In fact, it's one of the things which began the upper echelons of his writing career, and which would later result in the most prestigious award in writing, the Pulitzer Prize, being concocted, being created. And he ran a campaign. It was called, quote, Pennies from School Children, unquote. And literally, the school children of America, with pennies, put together the money for the pedestal, for the Statue of Liberty built by Fred, paid for by the French government, around a framework designed by Al Eiffel. I love that story. So I thought you'd enjoy it. And you probably know more about the Statue of Liberty than just about anybody you know. Well, I have another story for you this morning. And this is a fascinating story too, and I'm not going to get into great detail on it, but I'm going to tell you enough to kind of tickle your fancies. You know, there's all this current talk about the CIA and the FBI and, you know, da-da-da-da-da and the spy agencies. I mean, that's kind of been the topic here for the last 2 or 3 years, right, for a whole bunch of reasons. Well, believe it or not, there was a conspiracy. The very first really big, really nasty, horrendous, in fact, bigger than Trump mania, bigger than Watergate, bigger than just about anything in American history. And it was back literally in the opening days of the Revolutionary War. There was actually a plot to kill George Washington shortly after he became general of the army. Because, and I've talked about this in other shows, but in other contexts, you know, the colonies were almost evenly split. Those who wanted to remain with King George and those who wanted independence. Gee, kind of like today, right? And in the end, the revolution was carried out. I mean, only 7% of the population of the colonies played an active role in the Revolutionary War. Pretty amazing statistic. But there were, when Washington occupied the city of New York with an army of 10,000 men, why don't we just say the men were a little rough with the local citizens. And therefore the Tories, those that favored King George, who really didn't like the revolution and really didn't like George Washington anyway, got pissed off enough to hatch a plot, which was actually concocted by the then governor of New York, to kill George Washington and snuff out the revolution, because they correctly determined that this guy was the glue that held it together, as we all know, and history has shown that he was. Flashback a few months. So after Washington is designated as the general of the army by the Continental Congress, he realizes that he's going to need some security, a security detail. And he literally has all the various regiments, the Connecticut Regiment, the Vermont Regiment, the Virginia Regiment, you know, every state had their own regiments with their own uniforms and the whole, I mean, it was really kind of a ragtag army. But he had each of those regiments put forward their 5 or 6 or whatever it was, best men. And he personally interviewed every one of those men, and he selected 50 of them. And there's various names for that, you know, kind of a Praetorian Guard, but basically it was the General's Guard. And he came to know these men, and he was friendly with them, and literally they were his barrier and they were his shield wherever he went, these 50 hand-picked creme de la creme of the soldiers of the Continental Army were his protective force. Well, what a lot of people don't know back there in the Continental Army, yes, there were many, 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 many patriots, and yes, there were many men who served with no pay, but there were many folks in the Continental Army who were in it for the money. Yeah, they kind of believed in the concept of America, and yeah, they kind of were for the colonies and not for the king, but they picked up a musket because they were going to get a paycheck. The governor of New York knew this, and it just so happened that there were a number of the 50 soldiers, hand-picked soldiers in the General's Guard, that were on the payroll of the Continental Army. Well, the governor of New York, geez, this kind of sounds like modern politics, doesn't it? Follow the money. The governor of New York secretly approached, or had his agents secretly approach, a number of these men in the guard and offer them a buku sum of money to either let down their guard or to, shall we say, enforce their guard and kill Washington. There was actually a plot at a tavern in New York to poison him. And it was only by chance that the kitchen help, this was while all this was going on, the kitchen help dropped something in his peas. George Washington was a huge fan of peas. There's another little historical tidbit for you. And she dropped something in his peas and was mortified because, I mean, this is the general of the Continental Army. And she was a patriot. and she decided she would cook him new peas. So she went out to the alley behind the restaurant and threw the peas out on the cobblestone street, where they were quickly lapped up by two dogs who just as quickly killed over and died. The peas had been poisoned. So by a fluke of divine intervention, George Washington was not killed that night. He was not poisoned. Anyway, George Washington discovered the plot. And he rounded up everybody from like the governor of New York to the 20 or 30 bad apples in the general's guard and anybody who was remotely associated with this conspiracy to assassinate him and bring the Revolutionary War and the colony's quest for freedom to a quick and abrupt end. He rounded them up, and you probably don't know this, but in one of the largest public hangings in American history, and by far the largest hanging in publicly viewed hanging in North America to that time, to a crowd of 20,000 patriots, they were all hung as George Washington watched from his horse. How's that for an interesting story? And as far as conspiracies go, we have the Mueller, you know, Strzok, FBI, all that kind of stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, CIA, John Brennan. We have that whole deep state conspiracy going now. We have had conspiracies in the past, the JFK assassination, also, you know, whether or not FDR knew about the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in advance, the sinking of the Lusitania, which everybody to this day, a lot of historians believe was intentional by American agents to get us into the Spanish-American War, whatever. I make no, I offer no opinion on those viewpoints. My point is that one of the greatest conspiracies in American history was actually its very first conspiracy before it was even America. And I find that story fascinating. And by the way, as a little side footnote to that one, kind of like the one I gave you on the Statue of Liberty, one of Washington's most trusted guys, brilliant man, serving without pay, and in the end helped Washington put together his now famous spy ring, which, by the way, the conspiracy against his life is what prompted him to do that. And his spy ring is there's been a book written on it lately. I'll think about it. The name of it, it's great. But it was the very first spy ring of the American army or of the American people. And what prompted Washington to put together was this spy ring that had been put together around him to kill him. And the guy he put in charge of his spy ring, which was highly successful, was a guy by the name of John Jay. John Jay went on to become the first justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, and, according to historical law, even as a Supreme Court justice, continued to run the spies of the United States for at least two and perhaps three sitting American presidents, presidents 1, 2, and 3. And to this day, folks, there is a John Jay room at the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. How's that for a little footnote? Okay, now that I have talked about American history, I'm gonna tell you a little bit about people who are trying to tear it down. How's that? Give you a history lesson and tell you about people who want to obliterate it. Kind of fitting, isn't it? Well, why don't we start with corporate America? I've given you, you know, you can type in the search bar corporate America, boycott, whatever, and those names will come up for you. Starbucks, of course, rings a bell. I've given you 8 or 9 names, Liberty Mutual, Starbucks, I think Hertz, Avis, etc., that you, in my opinion, don't want to do business with. They do not support your values. They do not like you. You are deplorables. And in my opinion, you are a fool to give them a penny. You know, there's no sense funding your enemies, folks. Well, we have two more to unfortunately add to that, thankfully, relatively small list. The first one is Red Lobster, believe it or not, which, by the way, kind of pains me. You know, I don't eat out much. I don't leave the ranch much except for book signings and that kind of thing. But when I'm on the road, I always like at least like one night during a trip to stop in at a Red Lobster and get some seafood. And I mean, you know, their food's, it's not top of the line, but it's decent seafood. And there's a lot of it. And they got great rolls and all that kind of stuff. And I was very disappointed. Very, very disappointed to find out that Red Lobster... Red Lobster has decided that they can't support any conservative shows, either radio or TV, anymore. So they've withdrawn all their support from shows. Laura Ingraham, Tucker Carlson, and others. And you know, I'm not eating at Red Lobster anymore, even though it kind of pains me not to. I will find an alternative. So that's number one. Number two, and this ties right into where we're going to go next, toxic masculinity. You might have heard a little buzz over the course of this week about the Gillette commercial. If you haven't seen it, you should. And I'm pretty sure you can probably get it on YouTube. I mean, everybody's been talking about it. In that respect, it was rather brilliant. However, I think when you see this commercial, and you listen to my description of it, particularly in the larger context of quote-unquote toxic masculinity, you probably won't use a Gillette product ever again. I won't. I mean, I flatly will not. And to go one step further, Gillette was purchased, most people don't know this, but you need to, by Procter & Gamble. So that will tell you what other company I will never buy another product from, Procter & Gamble. And by the way, several other subsidiaries of Procter & Gamble happen to be on the list of companies not to do business with I've given you. So this Looney Tunes alt-left progressive mindset is coming from the holding company, Procter & Gamble. Anyway, I digress. This Gillette commercial starts off with, and you really need to see it, but it starts off with like eight or nine guys, kind of, you know, typical American red-blooded male types, standing with their arms folded in front of barbecues, saying inane things like boys will be boys, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. It kind of gives you the feel. And then as the commercial progresses, there's several examples of men who divert other men from doing something that exhibits male toxicity, such as looking at a woman that walks by, or a pretty woman walks by and a guy kind of his head perks up and he starts to kind of walk out after her, obviously to ask for a date or phone number or whatever, and he's stopped by another guy. And one of the things that's really interesting, it's subtle in this ad, it's one of the reasons I'd like you to look at it. Not only are they blasting this male toxicity, but you will notice that every male who exhibits male toxic masculinity is white. Every single one. And every single male who exhibits sensitivity and who stops these toxic masculine animals from doing what men do is black or Hispanic or something other than white. So there's a whole bunch of messages in this ad. Not only toxic masculinity as to all men, but also the other kind of recent battle cry of the left, which is white men are bad. White people, but particularly white men, and by the way, particularly white Jewish men, if you listen to the alt-left, are like the epitome of bad stuff, evil ooze. The root of all oppression, evil, social injustice. You need to see the ad. There is a reason that I led off with, I wouldn't call that a story, I would call that report for you. You know, our universities are turning out, to be kind, unthinking, robotic lemmings who know nothing about capitalism, who romanticize communism. There was a recent study about professors in universities around the United States. And liberal or left, alt-left teachers, professors, assistant professors, outnumbered conservative professors in this study 11.5 to 1. 11.5 to 1. For every conservative thinking instructor, there were 11 and a half liberal or ultra-liberal instructors. I mean, does that start giving you a feel? And I'm going to give you some statistics here shortly, which are going to scare the hell out of you. Does that give you a feel why two-thirds of millennials think the way they do? There was a really interesting article. It was written by, in fact, it came out January 1, 2019, by a gal by the name of Elizabeth Vaughn. And she and her family escaped from a totalitarian communist regime. In fact, her dad was killed by them in front of her eyes. And this was in Albania, in fact. And she talks in this article about how 100 million people died at the hands of leftist ideology over the last century. And she talks about the escape of her parents from Albania, the death of her father, etc., etc. She writes, quote, "Yet on college campuses across America, students in large numbers embrace the ideology of communism." Nikolai writes, "Depictions of communism on campus paint the ideology as revolutionary or idealistic, overlooking its authoritarian violence. Instead of deepening our understanding of the world, the college experience teaches us to reduce one of the most destructive ideologies in human history to a one-dimensional, sanitized narrative. Walk around campus and you're likely to spot Che Guevara on a few shirts and button pins. A sophomore jokes he's declared a secondary in, quote, communist ideology and implementation, unquote. The new leftist club on campus seeks a, quote, modern perspective on Marx and Lenin to, quote, alleviate the stigma around the concept of leftism. Communism cannot be separated from oppression. In fact, it depends upon it. In the communist society, the collective is supreme. Personal autonomy is non-existent. Human beings are simply cogs in a machine tasked with producing utopia. They have no value of their own. Many in my generation have blurred the reality of communism with the illusion of utopia. Folks, I thought the article, you should read it yourselves. I just read you just a few paragraphs of it. But she's right on the button. The left took over our institutions of higher education 40 years ago. We now have the millennials. The left took over our secondary and high schools in the last 10 to 20 years. And one of these days, probably in the next two or three weeks, I'm going to have a whole huge segment on what the left is doing with education of our elementary, junior, and high school children. It will piss you off and scare the hell out of you. And it is that same left that we see rearing its ugly head in the 40 freshman members in the House of Representatives. And it is that same young left, and some old left too, it is that same young left which is flocking to people like Cortez and Tlaib and some of these other quote-unquote radicals that you and I chuckle at as we listen to them spout their quote-unquote nonsense on TV. Well, I'm here to tell you, folks, while there's nothing wrong with being amused at their talk and delivery, do not underestimate these people. Do not underestimate their pull. Do not underestimate their savvy. Do not underestimate their ability to communicate using modern means, Twitter and whatever. Do not underestimate the following that they have. To do so will be at our peril, because they will kick our butts. As I'm about to demonstrate to you in this whole segment, having to do with toxic masculinity, which is how I led off into it, this is part of a grand plan. These youngsters in Congress that are commandeering the airwaves with interviews on like every channel and you name it by a moronic and complicit alt-left media, a lying, moronic, complicit alt-left media. These folks are both capable and smart. They are dedicated. And by dedicated, I don't mean in a good way. They're dedicated to the destruction of America as we know it and her fundamental transformation. The first of these people to achieve high public office and power was Barack Obama. That Manchurian candidate paved the way for what you are seeing now. He is a product of the beginning of that leftist takeover of young people's minds 40 years ago. And do not discount the power and influence that these people have. There was some very scary recent polling. There was like 40 to 50% of Americans no longer view socialism as, you know, bad. 63% of millennials actually favor socialism over capitalism. A fair chunk of millennials, 30 to 40%, think communists is great, i.e. this letter I wrote you by this immigrant from a communist country who's going to college now in the United States and, you know, appalled at what she sees. She sees coming up in college what she and her family, what her father died at the hands of, and what she and her family risked all to escape. And OAC, as we call Cortez, and the rest of them, they can spin a yarn. And they know exactly what they're doing. And they've all read Saul Alinsky's Handbook for Radicals. They follow it to a T if you watch what they do. To a T. Better than Hillary Clinton, who wrote her thesis on him. Better than Barack Obama, who often quoted him, of course, out of view of public microphones and cameras. Kind of like his picture with Louis Farrakhan. House Bill number 1, which was passed overwhelmingly, at least for Democrats, in the House of Representatives on the very first day that these folks took office, the 3rd or 4th of January, whichever day it was. Let me tell you a couple things about what were in that bill. Quote, massive government overhaul package is what the youngsters there in Congress call it. It included restrictions on super PACs. Not on unions, folks, just conservative super PACs. Under this bill, the left continues to be free to raise gobs, hundreds of millions of dollars from unions and other quote-unquote non-conservative super PACs. Automatic voter registration. In other words, it's not a conscious thing anymore. If you do X, Y, or Z, if you get a driver's license, by the way, even if you're an illegal alien under this bill, if you get a driver's license, you're automatically registered to vote. Independent redistricting commissions. I've told you about these battles that are going on over districting throughout the United States, in fact, spearheaded by Eric Holder and Barack Obama. to try and undo at least a portion of the 1,200 seats that were lost by Democrats during the Obama's reign of terror. Well, this bill stops all that. Instead, it sets up quote-unquote independent redistricting commissions whose rule is law. So can you imagine a democratically controlled Senate and House setting up quote-unquote independent redistricting commissions who would then redistrict every state in the United States? Gee, I wonder if that would favor kind of blue voters. I wonder. The forced release of presidential tax returns, not that that's a major point, and, the abolishment of any voter ID. No more voter ID. I mean, no voter ID at all. Like, you show up and you can vote, folks. Last week, one of these freshman congressmen let it slip on some interview, because one thing that they don't have going for them is they don't have a lot of experience. So sometimes they, by mistake, speak the truth, which is kind of revealing. And he let it slip. And I mean, like, there wasn't even a thought. He goes, well, of course illegal aliens should vote. And then he kind of caught himself, well, at least in local or state elections. And then the commentator pressed the guy, and he goes, well, what about national elections? Well, you know, with a proper act of Congress. Oh, you mean like House Bill 1? Wow. Anyway, the Democrats, with their normal fuzzy-wuzzy spin, they claim that H.R. 1 would, quote, restore integrity to government so that people can have confidence that government works for the people and not the special interests, unquote. I mean, folks, gag me. There was another bill introduced, by the way, to abolish the Electoral College, which was put into place after much consideration, if you read the Federalist Papers, more history for you, by the Continental Congress when they were drafting the Constitution. Because the southern states absolutely refused to be ruled by the more populous northern industrial states. The southern rural agricultural states, northern industrial states, kind of like what we have going today, right? The highly urbanized somewhere, you know, some in the center of the country, but mostly along the coasts, versus 90% of the land area of the country, the flyover part of the country. You know, we're all us bubbas and deplorables and 10-toothed skanks who smell at Walmart, where we live. It's amazing how history is repetitive. Circular and repetitive. It always repeats. What you saw, the battle in the Continental Congress between the southern and the northern states, which later, by the way, for that and other reasons, became the Civil War. That battle that you saw in the Continental Congress is the same battle that's playing out, although slightly different geographical configuration, today. The conspiracies, and they are horrible, that you see winding their corrupt and smelly way through the swamp today were mirrored by equally smelly and horrifying conspiracies way back then. Anyway, they have, they want to abolish the Electoral College, which basically, folks, and there's another bill, by the way, in addition to abolishing the Electoral College, which means that everything would be up by popular vote, you know, the tyranny of the majority, which is exactly what the Founding Fathers were trying to escape and ensure would never happen with the imposition of the Electoral College. In addition to that, they they want to take the Senate races. You know, there's two senators from every state. So Wyoming, where I am, and for those of you who are listening to me in New York or populous states, you know, so New York has, 30 million people. California has, 35 million people, whatever. You guys have two senators. Well, you know, Wyoming, we got 500,000 people, and we got two senators. And some people will say, well, that's not fair. Well, yeah, actually it is fair, and it was set up that way on purpose by the founders. I mean, those men were brilliant. maybe divinely inspired, but certainly brilliant. The Senate was set up so that every state, no matter its population, would have two representatives, and it was set up as a counterbalance to the House of Representatives, which is simply based on one representative per X amount of people. At this point in our history, it's one representative per 750,000 plus or minus folks. Which, by the way, ties into another change that they want to make sure doesn't happen or doesn't revert to the way it was, and which they got some judicial, Obama-appointed judge. Gee, imagine that. Some judicial non-constitutional help this last week, and that is adding back the question that was on the census from the day one of the very first census back in the 1780s until 1965 when it was taken off by, oh yeah, Lyndon Johnson, the Democrat. You know, the same guy who did the Great Society. The first Democrat to figure out that he could use everybody else's tax money to buy votes. The beginning of the end of what used to be a non-white majority vote for the Republican Party, the party of Lincoln, who freed the slaves and who issued the Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, these historical points are irrefutable. They are amazing. It is why the left wants to erase them. But Lyndon Johnson, with the Great Society, which, by the way, has squandered $12 trillion of our American taxpayer dollars since 1965 and done nothing, literally nothing, to alleviate poverty or increase education. But it has bought a whole bunch of votes. It has taken the last two generations of non-white voters and convinced them falsely that they need to vote Democratic or they won't get their check. And if you think about it, what all these freshman congressmen, etc., what they are proposing is free stuff. They're proposing Johnson's Great Society and Franklin Delano's New Deal on 100x steroids. There's nothing that won't be free. And there's nothing that you and I, the enemy of the state, will not pay for. There is no limit to the dollars they will suck out of our pocket to buy votes for themselves with free stuff for their constituents, thereby gaining and maintaining power in perpetuity. It is as clear to me, folks, as turning the page one of my books. I mean, crystal clear. It is brilliant. It is devious. And they are far ahead of us in their thought process, particularly on the educational side. They have trained a whole generation to vote for them and to think like them. It is really quite disconcerting. You're seeing the fruits of that, not just with, you know, the Green New Deal that all these young radical progressives are touting. You know, every American is guaranteed productive employment. Medicare for all will cure the nation's ailments. Free college is as elemental. I'm actually quoting now from it. Free college is as elemental a right as life itself. The ultra rich will pay the freight. Yeah, okay. I mean, we kind of see where all this is going, can't we? And then we've really seen it on display in the last 2 weeks. We've had Gavin, the new governor out there in California. I talked a little bit about this last week, promising California would from heretofore be a sanctuary state for everybody on the planet Earth. Think about that now. It's going to be a sanctuary state for everybody on the planet Earth. And by the way, if you make it here to California and enjoy our sanctuary for you, people of the Earth, we will give you free stuff. We will give you free food. We will give you a place to live. And of course, we will give you free health care And don't worry about being a citizen of the United States, because that's all taken care of in Sanctuary Utopia, California. You don't need to bother with any of that. You can vote, you can eat, you can stay out of the rain, and you can go to the doctor. This is a state, folks, I've done, you know, any of you who have listened to this show for any length of time, I've done shows on the economic plight, the most broke states. Well, guess what's right up there in top three, California. So they're going to enact a program that in California is going to cost trillions, and they're beginning with a $116 billion unsolvable debt with their pension funds like tens of billions of dollars underwater. Good luck on this. And I'm sure in their mind, their cohorts will be working on a national level to ensure alt-left progressive control of Washington, D.C. So when California runs into problems, they'll just go to their buddies in Washington, D.C., and they'll get more stuff, more money, to give out more free stuff. I mean, I guarantee you that's what they're thinking. And then we have de Blasio in New York. I guess he was like, he didn't want to get outdone by Gavin out there in California. So instead, de Blasio in New York, he announces his plan to provide health care to all New Yorkers, including specifically illegal immigrants. And he announced this with Jake Tapper, of all people, on CNN, of all places, in his State of the City address. Okay. Let me give you some quotes about this. Do you folks remember the show I did on reparations? I've done two. I did one really in-depth on what has gone on in Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, and what is currently, right now, going on in South Africa. I've told you about what Maxine Waters has said about reparations. I've told you about what Barack Obama has said about reparations. Eric Holder has said about reparations. I told you about what Barack Obama said in his speech in South Africa 4 months ago, at the very time the South African government is doing white genocide and taking, without compensation and without notice, no due process, the lands of anybody who is not black. I mean, if you're brown or you're yellow or you're red or you're white, they're taking your stuff and redistributing it. They're taking your 4,000-acre farm that you've busted your butt over, that's fourth generation, and they're splitting it into 40-acre parcels and giving it out to the folks as free stuff for their votes forever. Now, if you don't think, with the words I'm about to share with you from de Blasio, with what Gavin is doing in California, with what AOC and her cohorts in Congress are talking about with the new Green Deal and 70% taxes, which they say is just going to be on the ultra-rich, yeah, okay, then you don't have a living brain cell. Can you see where this is going? Where at the same time they are trying to screw down gun rights. Oh yeah, there's like already gun control bills going in the Senate and the House, including one bill that allows confiscation. I mean, one of the things that these people are probably most worried about is the fact that at some point those 60, 65, 70, 80 million bubbas that they can't stand, all of whom have guns and ammo, are going to say, enough is enough. I mean, this gun thing isn't about safety at all, except maybe their own safety. It's about power and control. And it's one of those dots. It's one of those dots. But I digress. So Jake Tapper, who actually asked a few good questions of de Blasio, said, well, if you're going to give free health care to everybody in New York, including illegal, you know, I'm sure he said undocumented workers, including illegal aliens, what's going to stop, like, everybody from coming to New York to get free stuff? And de Blasio shrugged his shoulders. You ought to see the interview. I mean, you could tell he was lying through his teeth. Shrugged his shoulders and goes, oh, quote, I don't see that happening, unquote. Nah. Bill. Nah. Nobody's going to go to New York just to get free stuff. You bet. Let me continue with what de Blasio had to say. We should have single-payer Medicare for all. Gee, it sounds like Cortez. No question. But the bottom line is, right now we have 600,000 people in my city who have no coverage at all. That's unacceptable. That's making us as a city less healthy, less secure than we need to be. Our plan is guaranteed health care for all and says this should be a priority to ensure that we have a decent kind of society. If you don't do that, what happens? People are sick at work. Their families get sick. They go to the emergency room. And that's the single most costly way to provide health care. We know that by guaranteeing health care, we're going to create the kind of society that works. There's plenty, listen to this quote now carefully. There's plenty of money in the city. It's just in the wrong hands. Unquote. Now, folks, I mean, can this ideology, can those words, can this mindset be any clearer to you? Any clearer to you? Anyway, Tapper said, who decides whose hands are the right hands and whose hands are the wrong hands, referring to whose hands have the money? And de Blasio's response was, when I say there's plenty of money in this country, it's just in the wrong hands. It means to say we need policies that give back to working people, like guaranteeing health care for all. Okay. Anyway. And by the way, they have the same arguments and talking points. Well, back in the days of Eisenhower, the country was doing great. We had 60% tax rates. You know, that's a false flag, folks. Back in the 60s, we were the only industrial power in the world. The other powers of on the entire planet had no industry. Japan was destroyed. Europe was mostly destroyed and rebuilding. China was destroyed. The only industrial power literally on the planet and the only more or less untouched army on the planet and the only country of any significance, I mean, I'm not talking about Canada, Mexico, that was not devastated itself, that had no war fought in its boundaries, was the United States. And it was a whole different, it was a whole different world. You could have a 60% tax rate, even though I totally disagree with it, because the 40% was so much more valuable than 40% of an income is today. This is, you know, this is form over substance, this argument. OAC uses it, de Blasio uses it, it's a talking point. They all fax it around to each other, just like the same talking points that you see dribbled on station after station by dumb pundit after dumb pundit every day that you listen to the media. Manufactured crisis at the border. Manufactured crisis at the border. This made-up crisis at the border. This manufactured crisis, you know, you've heard it all. Basically, folks, what these people are proposing is a systematic agenda. I mean, step by step, sequence by sequence, very cleverly played out, very cleverly concealed, very, very cleverly guised, very cleverly marketed through their Twitters and their soft, fuzzy words and social justice and yada, yada, yada. They're basically proposing a systematic agenda to take money from folks, to give it to other folks to buy their vote. It is as simple as that. It is not rocket science. That is the end result. And when they get into power, particularly if a population has been de-armed and cannot protect itself, they will then move to the reparations stage. This is why I've been doing those shows for you over the last year. I'm starting to tie all this together. You're seeing it for yourself. You're listening as these people have been dragged and coaxed and teased out of the closet by Trump. You can see them and listen to them and hear them and watch them for what they are. This is no longer conjecture. This is who they are. This is what they want. This is their plan to do it. And this is the limits to which they will go to achieve it. And at risk is the Republic. Our freedoms, our safety, our actual physical security, and certainly all the things that all of us have worked for and worked on behalf of our kids and our kids' kids for. They want to turn this upside down, folks. They want to shake and wring every asset and every dime out of the pot of America and put it in the jar of socialism and perpetual power. Make no mistake. And do not discount these people, including OAC, with her big smile and her antics and her marching around the Capitol and her selfies. And do not discount them. Watch it like a hawk. Understand what's really going on here. It may look like a circus to you, but it's not a circus. It is a frontal assault on the foundations of this country, faith, family, and the Constitution, and eventually, if they get power, on private property. And part of this, folks, part of this fundamental transformation, and who was the first one to use that term? Oh, yeah, that's right, Barry Obama in 2008. As part of this fundamental transformation is the dilution of our culture and values through illegal immigration. I talked about this at some length last week. It is, you know, I posted some stuff on the Facebook and some great memes, by the way. If you haven't been to our Facebook page, go take a look. You will die laugh. You will roll off the chair on which you're sitting when you look at the computer. I mean, some of them have like 300-400 likes. That'll give you an idea. www.facebook.com/ontherightsideradio. www.facebook.com/ontherightsideradio. And throw us a like while you're there. That's expanded dramatically over the last 6-7 months. What I'm trying to say is this. The fundamental transformation of America is on many levels. It is represented by many acts and lack of acts, guises, outright lies, manipulations, distortions. And I think we've all gotten pretty good at recognizing them. But what a lot of media does not do for you, because they focus on what's ever going on today or whatever went on yesterday or whatever pet project they got, what I try and do for you is I try and take all this stuff, all these dots that are out there floating around the room, and collect them in one bottle so that you can see what's in the bottle rather than all the little seemingly unconnected droplets of soda floating around in the air. And what's going on here is scary. And part of this immigration thing, which is the dilution of American culture, is exhibited not only by their reluctance to build a wall and all their false tears, crocodile tears over illegal immigrant children and all that crap. I mean, that's just obvious, guys. It's also manifested by their ever-increasing and strident attacks on white, particularly white males, particularly white Jews. I mean, there's some subsets of whites that they really don't like. Males and Jews are just two of them. And you see, by beating on quote-unquote white, that automatically elevates non-white. And I don't care, red, green, black, yellow, irrelevant. The voting bloc they are trying to eliminate in a whole bunch of ways, and certainly to overpower with voter fraud, electioneering, electoral college, no more two senators. I mean, all this stuff is us And along the way, anybody who thinks like we do, and that includes any conservative Hispanics, any conservative blacks, any conservative Jews, any conservative Asians. What they really hate, folks, are conservatives and moderates, for that matter, and independents, for that matter. If you're not left or alt-left or Islamist, then you're the enemy. But one of the ways that they're going to try and get there is, number one, to separate, quote-unquote, white from everybody else. And certainly white males, because, they probably have all the guns. So this is not a racial talk tonight. It has nothing to do with race. It has to do with politics. I am not the one who thought up the name white privilege. Like, gag me. Or as they would say on South Park, whatever. I am not the one who espouses anti-Semitic vomit. I am not the one who says that a wall to protect America and Americans is racist. I saw some gal on some show sometime this week say, that wall is nothing more than, if you're brown, turn around. I mean, what? That wall doesn't protect Asians, Native Americans, Latinos, Puerto Ricans, Cubans, white people, black people. I mean, please. But you can understand what they're trying to do. And now they're kind of delving into the subsets of those that they want to, as Saul Alinsky would say, freeze, isolate, and destroy, and replace. One of those subsets are white males. Not just white anymore. You know, Michelle Obama saying, whites are the root cause of all oppression on earth. I mean, Google it up. That's her words. But white males. And the reason that white males are really, really, really bad is because they have the most toxic masculinity, i.e. this Gillette commercial I told you about. The American Psychiatric Institute, remember I was telling you here earlier in the show, 11.5 to 1, folks. Well, those same academics are who writes the American Psychological Journal. Okay, so that'll... Let me give you the source. Let me tell you about the source first. And probably the editorial staff, there is no one. It's just 11.5 to 0. They came out with a study and a whole article. This is just in the last 2 weeks. About toxic male masculinity. And they talked about, and I was going to give you a bunch of stats, but I'm not going to. But they talked about all sorts of things. I mean, how toxic male masculinity is kind of the root of all violence, the root and essence of all feminine oppression, the genesis, the seed of racism, the germinating cause of war, conflict, and fights. I mean, the list is like, you just want to gag. Basically, what they're saying is wimps are good, transgender or LGBTQT or neutered, I guess, males are best. And there's just no room in today's society, in today's enlightened world, for a man's man. Which is exactly the message of that Gillette ad. Well, at the same time, the left, for the last 10 or 20 years, has been pumping up feminism, right? I mean, go back and listen to my show, the March of the Angry Vaginas. This is the Women's March a year ago. So what happens when you get women angry and make them feel like victims? And then as part of the campaign, you start attacking men and telling them not to consort with women. I'm boiling this down. I mean, not only do you achieve some division for political purposes, get your votes, but what else do you do? You kind of drive a wedge between the genders and the sexes, don't you? Which results, at least to some degree, to less relationships between the sexes, to more distrust between the sexes, certainly to less long-term stable relationships to the sexes, and that leads to, less children. Hold that thought. Let's go to the next dot. The abortion movement. So the pro-life folks had a march yesterday. It was huge. It was huge. I mean, like on ultra-high time speed up, it was like a minute and a half long. And I mean, it was like building. It was really impressive how many people were at that pro-life march, which, by the way, nobody covered. Fox had it on for a little bit. I mean, MSNBC, I think, mentioned it for 5 seconds, no pictures. I tuned into CNN on purpose, zero. ABC, zero. And there was a boatload of people. I mean, it had to be 500,000. It was probably more. It was amazing. I couldn't believe how many people there were. Marching in the snow, no less. Cold and dreary day. But what do the Democrats, the progressives, the Ocasio-Cortezes, the de Blasios, the Gavins, the Pelosis, the Obamas, what do they preach? Oh, women's rights. The right to control her own body. This right and that right. And those enemies, those toxic masculine white guys and, you know, all the rest of these conservative, you know, chest-beating, evangelical, alt-right, Christian whatevers. They want to take that right away from you. And we better give $500 million a year to Planned Parenthood to do abortions. And yada, 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 yada. This show is not about whether abortion is good or bad. One day I'll do a show on that, because I have pretty strong opinions on it. This show is about something else. This is a show about a really diabolical, brilliantly conceived, launched and operating on many levels, many dimensions, and many planes plot. Maybe the biggest plot in American history, bigger than the deep state, although the deep state's part of it. Bigger than the 50 guards trying to kill George Washington. Bigger than Pearl Harbor. Bigger than any of the scandals you want to think about. Because this is about taking down the republic. So what do abortions do, folks? No matter what you think of them, good, bad, indifferent, or ugly, what is the net result of an abortion? Oh, you don't have a baby. You have less births. So now we have division between the sexes, less relationships and less births, and, you know, like pedal to the metal support of abortions, which, this is an unbelievable statistic, has resulted in 46 million abortions since Roe v. Wade. 46 million human beings that are not walking this planet, that are not in the United States, since Roe v. Wade. And you know how the Democrats think of it, folks? They think of it as 46 million votes they don't have. That's exactly how they think about it. Let's go to the next little dot here that I'm trying to draw for you. Immigration. The more illegal immigrants, the better. We have to be compassionate, you know. We have to be humane. You know, there's two ways to make money when you own a business, folks. You can increase revenues, or you can decrease costs. Or you can do both. And the costs to the alt-left are everybody who doesn't vote for them, doesn't think like them, and who could create votes, you mean kids, create votes that could challenge their rule in the future. Think about it. And on the revenue side, they have, 22 million illegal aliens in the United States and tens of thousands arriving monthly. So the Democrats are going full bore on this business model of control. They are both increasing their revenues, i.e. their votes or future votes, and doing everything they can to decrease and stifle their costs, which is everybody who won't vote for them. And if you think about these dots that I've presented for you this morning, if you think about, if you listen to last week's show and all those dots, and you watch what's happening and listen carefully, I mean, feel free to chuckle, but remember, don't discount them, to what all these progressives are now coming out of the closet and saying, this freshman class in Congress, de Blasio, Gavin, you know, crazy Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren, Gillibrand from New York, Kamala Harris from, listen to them. Look behind the fuzzy words. Think bigger than the sentence that they are telling you. Think about the sentence that I gave you from de Blasio. There's lots of money, it's just in the wrong hands. You know, one day, if they get their way, somebody will say, there's lots of property, it's just in the wrong hands. There's lots of houses, there's just in the wrong hands. Don't think I'm conspiracy guy here. History has taught us what is so. Cuba, Venezuela, communist China, Lenin in Russia, Hitler in Germany. If it was a left-wing government that came to power, and I don't mean left-wing socialists like Denmark, which is bad enough, or Sweden. I'm talking about alt-left. Communist alt-left, which is what these people are. These people are past progressive, which is alt-left. They are communists. Listen carefully to what they are saying. Bill de Blasio is a full-blown communist. So is Gavin in California. So is Ocasio-Cortez. They are not socialists. They are not progressives. They are communists. They are Lenin with a cell phone. And they're very smart. And they're very good. And don't take them for granted. There's a few other points that I wanted to handle on this. And the last one I think I'll do as I'm connecting these dots for you. So you have this toxic masculinity. Then you have white males or oppressive social justice. Then you have feminine victims. Then you have abortion is good. You have all these dots, okay? Illegal immigration, no wall, compassion, humanity, blah, 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 blah. You have all these dots, which are designed, I think it's pretty clear, to reduce costs, i.e. everybody who doesn't vote for you, and increase revenues, i.e. everybody who does or will in the future vote for you. And I talked a little bit about it on last week's show, but I want to dwell on it just for a minute or two this morning. So Goolsbee, who was one of the chief economic advisors to our friend Comrade Obama, Austin Goolsbee, likable type guy on the tube, you know, he knows how to play the game. And Tucker Carlson was questioning him. And he was questioning him about illegal immigration, how much is too much, and da da da. And, you know, Goolsbee was doing a great kind of alt-left tap dance around these questions. And at one point, Tucker kind of stuck him with a question, and it kind of ticked him off. And he kind of blurted out, as the left sometimes does, they blurt out the truth. And he said, well, we got to have illegal immigration because we're losing population. We don't have a big enough birth rate. We need illegal immigration just to kind of keep the country on its feet. Bingo. Bingo, folks. There is a top guy on the left. You don't get any more top than left hand of a Barack Obama. And he just spilled the beans. I don't think anybody in the media, I think Tucker kind of caught it. I don't think anybody else in the media, I didn't hear anybody else talk about it whatsoever. I thought it was huge. This is like, you know, a guy up in the top 10 cabal of the left admitting that this is all a ploy to replace one population with another. And that's exactly what it is. Let's talk about some of the forces. I'm going to finish up this show, this last segment on Judicial Watch. Let's talk about some of the forces for good, for right, for the Constitution, for American values, for all Americans, white, black, yellow, brown, red, Mars, whatever. And that's Judicial Watch. Here's just some of the things, and you've seen Tom Fitton on TV or listened to him on the radio or read his articles. Jay Sekulow, of course, you know that name. Here are some of the things. They're a big outfit. You have no idea of how many great things they do for America and for Americans to try and keep government, and I don't care whether it's left, right, Republican, Democrat, under control, to safeguard the rights of Americans, to safeguard the Constitution. These guys rock. And they work on donations. And you should support them. I mean, a year from now, it's going to be time to start giving to campaigns. So right now is a time to give to those who are trying to protect us in the legal and domestic sense. Here's just some of the things that they have done over the last year. They have an election integrity project. They've been forcing states to follow federal election law, take reasonable steps to clean up their voter rolls, you know, get rid of non-U.S. citizens, dead people, all that kind of stuff. They've won two huge court cases just in the last year, Ohio and Kentucky, and they're about to win one in California, forcing those states to clean up their voter rolls. In California, they haven't cleaned up the voter rolls in 20 years. Do you have any idea? What do you want to bet that of the 2.5 million votes, which was like the entire quote-unquote popular vote, we won the popular vote that Hillary was crying about in 2016. What do you want to bet? Almost every one of those friggin' votes, which were all out of California, mostly out of L.A. County, how do you want to bet they were illegal votes, felonious votes, fraudulent votes, votes by dead people, people voting more than once, illegal aliens who shouldn't be, you know, I can go down the list. Anyway, Judicial Watch won a battle against California, and even California has to clean up its rolls, although I'm sure they'll find some reason not to. They have been tireless in their efforts against the deep state, the current big conspiracy and corruption. You know, we talked about George Washington back there in the beginning. We've mentioned a few of the others. The current one is the deep state attempted coup, not of Donald Trump, folks, but of you and me. The attempted coup of our electoral will. The coup and the destruction and the torpedoing of our vision for our country and our kids. That is what they're trying to overthrow. Trump is just the symbol of, he's the pinata. We're all the candy they want to beat out of the pinata, okay? And they have done a whopping job. I mean, most of the stuff that's come out, all the texts from Peter Strzok and all, just unbelievable stuff, that's Judicial Watch with FOIA requests, relentless litigation, relentless, that the Republicans in Congress never had the cojones to do, would have never gotten done. We wouldn't know about any of this stuff. They've continued to push for, and I told you about this 2 weeks ago, they want a huge deal with a federal judge who's forcing Hillary Clinton, I'm telling you, this isn't over yet, to answer questions about her email server, obstruction of justice, destroying evidence, all that kind of stuff. I mean, this is the first time a federal judge has held Hillary Clinton's feet to the discovery fire. It is Judicial Watch that discovered her secret server because of their relentless pursuit of documents on Benghazi. I told you when Benghazi happened, it would never go away. Everybody else said, ah, I forgot about it. You almost never hear Benghazi, folks. Well, it was literally our finger in the door of the massive, we kind of knew it was there, but it was our finger in the door that opened to the room that we could see of the massive, massive, unfathomable, breathtaking corruption in our government. It's Judicial Watch that got their finger in the door for us. Some of the other things they've done, they're trying to shut down, there are all sorts of lawsuits that they're working on trying to shut down sanctuary cities, control a rampant abuse of even existing immigration law, which is not great. Accountability in Congress. And by the way, they don't play favorites. I mean, if Republicans step out of line, they're on them like flies on caca. And they do the same with Democrats. They're about transparency and accountability. May I suggest that you go to, if you want to get information, you can go to info@judicialwatch.org. info@judicialwatch.org. That's their email. And if you want to contribute some money, and you should, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, whatever, judicialwatch.org, www.judicialwatch.org. Anyway, they do a tremendous job on many fronts. I didn't cover all of them. I'm about out of time. But do yourself a favor, because what these guys uncover might be very beneficial for those running in elections to use in 2020. So you're kind of doing double duty here. You're protecting your rights. You're keeping the watchdogs funded. You're discovering more information. And hopefully you are getting to a point where the information that's discovered by Judicial Watch can be used effectively in the next big campaign. Well, I hope I've given you some stuff to think about this morning. I hope you enjoyed the stories. Those two historical stories have always tickled me. And I hope I gave you some, unfortunately, foul-tasting food for thought on what's really going on with all this nonsense. Whitelist, masculine toxicity, abortion, illegal immigration, you name it. It's all tied into one thing, folks. And it's all tied into the detest and loathing the left feels for faith, family, the Constitution, America, and everybody, and that includes all of us, and most of us listening to this show, who don't think or ascribe to what they do. It's simple as that. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.